Now, let's take a look at what exactly we want to do. We want to test the O'Hare theorem, and wrapping it up in a very nice and short way, the O'Hare theorem says that black holes are described by only two parameters, mass and spin, in GR. And this is already the entire story, because that's all there is. They are described by the Kerr metric, and that's it. And we even have a mechanism how such black holes can be formed in practice. During their formation, any other signature other than mass and spin is radiated away as gravitational waves. And so the expectation is that all astrophysical black holes are indeed Kerr black holes. However, that is not necessarily the case. There are several black holes that are not Kerr black holes, which have been discovered in other gravity theories. And I have a brief list of those over here. Finally, you could have other options. You could have exotic objects. You could have naked singularities. The different point is that the Kerr metric is actually not unique to GR. So the point that I want to make here is that there are a number of theoretical considerations which make it very interesting to look at this. And what we want to do is we want to do this with the HD, and I'm going to show you how we will do this. Now, doing that, as you might imagine, requires a very technical apparatus. It requires a very careful modeling of the underlying space-time around the black hole. So during the next two slides, I'm going to give you the brief idea of this in a nutshell, and then I will move straight to the applications. So for the GI experts among you, I'm going to keep this short and sweet. If you would like to hear more about the technical details, please ask me afterwards. So how do we want to do this? We want to ask the question, is it a Kerr black hole or is it something else? And I just listed these alternatives. Our strategy is the following. We take the space-time of the black hole and we expand it into multiple moments. And this is analogous to what we all know from, say, electrodynamics, where you can have a charge distribution, and you want to know what is the electric potential at some distance from the source. Then you can do an expansion in multiple moments, and that is a very nice way of doing this. Now, in GR, or in gravity theories, you can do this as well. The only difference is that now you have to do this in curved space, which is a lot more difficult. But it can be done. For a black hole, it turns out that the first moment is the mass, the second moment is the spin, and for a Kerr black hole, this is already the entire story, because all higher order moments are completely determined in terms of those two. And so our strategy here is to take the next order moment, the quadrupole moment, and we parameterize it, and the quadrupole moment for a Kerr black hole is simply minus the spin squared, and so we add this, this deviation parameter epsilon here, which parameterizes any potential deviation or potential deviations from the Kerr metric. And then we can use observations to see whether the quadrupole moment is indeed minus the spin squared, in other terms, if epsilon is zero or not. If it is, then we have a Kerr black hole, case settled. If it's not, there are two possibilities. If GR still holds, it means that the object is not a black hole, it has to be something else. If, on the other hand, we can make an argument that we have an event horizon, and I believe that we can make this argument for Sanjay Star and also for M87, it means that in this case, GR will be falsified. So this is very interesting. Now, this whole idea was originally developed in the gravitational wave community, stretching back over 20 years. And the framework precisely that I introduced you to here, that is the so-called quasi-Kerr metric, which was introduced by Glampindakis and Babak. This is pretty much the simplest thing that you can do, and this is what we used to start out with. However, this metric, just as most of the others that have been proposed, and there are a few, these kinds of metrics usually have very serious troubles, and that is that outside of the event horizon, if you go away from GR, these kinds of framework naturally introduce unphysical properties. So you can have something like naked singularities. You can have regions where causality is violated. And you kind of have to handle these things in your simulation. And the only way of doing this is by imposing a cutoff radius somewhere outside of the event horizon, where you simply do not attempt to simulate anything inside of that. This imposes a very technical limitation. I proposed a metric which did not have this kind of issue 3 years ago. However, even that metric did have its shortfalls. And so ideally what we want to have here, we want to have a metric which does not have any of these kinds of very technical issues. And the different questions is generality. If you look at the symmetries of your black hole spacetime, how many parameters do you need in order to parametrize these kinds of deviations? And the answer is you need 4. Because in GR, you can specify your black hole metric in terms of 4 functions, and that already specifies the entire metric. So this means that when you go away from the from GR, what you would need is something with at least 4 parameters. And I recently designed a new metric which can accommodate this. And just to give you an idea, this is what this looks like. So this is a new curl-like metric which describes a black hole. So this is massive mathematics. This is only to intimidate you. And this metric can indeed be mapped to known non-GR black holes. This now depends on 4 deviation functions, which are here on the right side. It turns out that in practice, these 2 are the most relevant ones for imaging. We truncate this at the first order. So the interesting parameters here are alpha 1.3 and alpha 2.2. And also, this metric is suitable for GRMHT type simulations. And this is very interesting because this is really the first time that we're able to do this. Okay. Now enough with that. Now let's go to the applications, and now let's look at images of the galactic center, because this is what we're interested in. So black holes have a shadow. There it is, plain and simple. And we already know that for a Kerr black hole, the shape of the shadow depends uniquely on the mass, the inclination, and the spin of the black hole. And as we showed, this also is true when you have a deviation away from GR. Then this deviation shows up in the following manner. It distorts the shape of your shadow, and the shadow becomes elongated in one way or the other. And then we incorporated this into Avery's ray tracing code. And here I'm showing you RIEF images, and these kinds of shadow distortions are clearly visible. Now I say clearly, of course, the first question is, well, can we observe it? Can we see this? So let me show you this slide. Here I'm showing you these images for 3 different values of this epsilon parameter, showing you then the same image in the UV plane. This is the simulation, and then here this is with the scatter broadening folded in. Again, the image and the UV plane. And these blue dots, this is the first generation EHT data. And by first generation, I simply mean anything up to 2009. Now, looking at these images, you might be tempted to think that, well, these look very similar, so how could we possibly tell the difference? But in fact, if you look very closely at these images, already the first generation EHT data are able to distinguish these. And here on the right-hand side, I'm showing you the corresponding probability density. And in fact, the image in the middle is about twice as likely as the other ones. So this shows that indeed we are able to distinguish these images. And then we did the full-scale analysis of this. This requires the production of a huge image library. And this is for the 2009 data. This is the new data that Vincent Fish presented about 2 days ago. Here I'm showing you the probability function marginalized as a function of the spin and of the deviation. And you see that from these data to the new data, we see about an improvement of about a factor of 2. So that's very nice. Over here, these data we were not able to produce a real constraint on this deviation function. You can see these white lines here are the 1, 2, and 3 sigma contours, and they pretty much included the entire parameter space, so we were not able to produce a constraint. Now, for the new data, we are able to produce this kind of number formally. However, what we want to be very clear about, if you look at the 1 sigma contour here, this clearly encloses the GR case, so GR is safe for now. Now, the real question is, of course, what can we do in the future? And here I'm showing you with a full DHT, we're able to do this. And zooming in a little bit more, here I'm showing the results from a simulation that we did. This is a simulation now for the full EHT for 1 day observing run. And you can see that we can get extremely, extremely precise constraints on these parameters. And what I'm showing you here is 3 sigma errors. But let me be clear about what this is and what this is not. These kinds of constraints are specific to the underlying RIEF model. So what I'm showing you here is model dependent. However, given this model, as I'm showing you here, I can produce these kinds of extremely tight constraints, which is very exciting because here I'm demonstrating that we're able to do this. And also we have assumed realistic measurement conditions. We're assuming an 8 station array, including ALMA, of course, the South Pole, the LMT, the 2 European stations. We simulate measurements every 15 minutes, and we include for this array all possible visibilities and closure phases for 1 day observation. 1 day. And this is what we get. But actually, even these contours are 40% too large. Because what happened here is that when I ran the simulation, I actually neglected about half of the data. So right now I'm going back, I'm refining the simulation, and what I can tell you is that these contours are going to shrink by another 40%. Okay, so this is wonderful. But as I said, this is model dependent. So ideally what we want to have something which is model independent. And for this, we have to look at the photon ring. So the photon ring is something that we've been talking about all week. This is clearly seen in various simulations that have been created so far. And this is a very interesting signal because all that you really need is you need plasma which is bright and radiates. The space-time will take care of the rest of it. So this is a very interesting signal that we want to take a look at. Where exactly does this come from? Well, suppose here's our black hole. If photons arrive at the black hole with just the correct impact parameter, they are going to circle around the black hole many times in the neighborhood of the circular photon orbit, and this is what produces this very bright but narrow ring-like feature. The projection of the circular photon orbit onto the observer sky produces what we call the silhouette of the black hole, or the silhouette of the black hole shadow. This is what this looks like, and as you can see here, this is now for a Kerr black hole. For a Kerr black hole, this shadow is almost always circular. The only time when this can be different is when you have very high spin and very high inclinations. This is an important thing that we need to keep in mind. I can be more precise about this. There are different things that we can take a look at. We can look at the diameter of the black hole, and this is what this is. The diameter decreases slightly when the spin increases, but all in all, the diameter is a very constant feature for a Kerr black hole. The asymmetry is always small, as I said, unless you go to very high spin and high inclinations. So this is very, very important because this changes dramatically when you go away from GR. And there are two effects that come into play. First of all, the diameter of the ring now varies. And now I'm using my new metric framework, which I introduced at the beginning. This one parameter, alpha 1,3, does indeed change the diameter of the ring so that this is now a handle that we have to test for GR deviations. A different aspect, which is equally, if not more interesting, is that these ring shapes can become very asymmetric. And you can see here, this can really be asymmetric. So this could be a very interesting feature that we can go and look for. And I can be a little bit more quantitative about this. This is the kind of variation that we can see for the ring diameter. And then we have the asymmetry of the ring, which can be really large if we have a suitable deviation from the Kerr metric. And so the upshot is that the ring asymmetry and a disproportionate ring size are direct measures of a violation of the Noether theorem. What do I mean by disproportionate? Well, the size of the ring is the opening angle is determined by the mass and the distance of the black hole. But we have existing measurements from the stellar orbits, hopefully from the pulsars, and there are other measurements as well. So by using those, we can compare these measurements and by that infer a value for this deviation parameter. And this is what I'm going to show you next. So how can we measure this ring diameter? Here I'm showing you two images from a recent paper by Fish et al. Where they incorporate a very clever deblurring algorithm. And there's going to be an entire talk about this by Michael Johnson on Friday. Here what I'm doing is I use these images to estimate the precision that we can achieve for this diameter measurement. So here we do the following. This is a theoretical image straight out of the simulation. And this is the reconstructed image where they folded in the scatter broadening and then reconstructed the image with this very, very clever algorithm. And our strategy here is the following. First, we take this line and we draw it across the center of the image where we think the center of the image is. And we do a Gaussian fit of the intensity profile on these two edges, what I labeled 1A and 1B. This defines as the center of the image. And then we draw additional chords across the image through the center. And this angle here is determined by the width of the Gaussian that we get from this Gaussian fit. And we take this width as an estimate of the beam. So this tells us how many of these chords can we draw across this image. And then we do additional Gaussian fits of this intensity profile. along the faint side of the ring. And then in the end, we produce an average of these. And by that, we get about a precision of about plus minus 1 microarcseconds for the ring diameter. This number is preliminary. This is still something that we are discussing. But at the moment, this is what I can give you. We do not attempt to determine the diameter from this side of the ring, because there, as you can see, there we have this thick blob, which makes it difficult to determine the clear position of the ring. And so we only use the faint side of the ring, and then we determine the peak positions in the reconstructed image, in the theoretical image. We compare those, and the combination of those is what gives us this number. There's also another way of doing this. You can do this with a pattern matching technique, and there will be a talk by Dimitrios later this afternoon about this. And one thing that I want to emphasize, this method only works if the ring is circular. If it's not, then you have to go to the pattern matching. Okay, now, given that we have this kind of estimate, what can we do with that? Well, now I combine existing measurements of the mass and distance from the stellar orbits. This is this contour. And this is now the 2009 data from Stefan. I combine this with a distance measurement. It's a parallax measurement of mesas near the galactic center by Reed et al, which came out very recently. And then I combine this with 1 and with 10 observations of the ring diameter by the EHT. And as I understand it, this is a very realistic number. And what you could see here is that the constraints for mass and distance, they improve dramatically if we combine this. So this is something which is very interesting. However, what is perhaps even more interesting, at least for me, is when we use this to constrain the deviation that is introduced by this parameter alpha 1,3, which changes the ring diameter. And you can see that with only 10 observations from the EHT, we can constrain this parameter to about plus minus 0.5 at 2 sigma. And only 10 observations. And this is all existing data. And this does not even include the recent update that Stefan just showed us. So this is very exciting. And let me reiterate, this is largely model independent, because only what we need here is we need the shape of the photon ring. We extract the ring diameter in, for example, the way that I showed you. And then we can get these kinds of constraints. Now, going one step further, what can we do in the long term? Well, there's the simulation by Weinberg et al, and we've already talked about this very briefly at the beginning of the conference. A little bit down the road, sometime down the road, we will have 30-meter class telescopes. And they estimated that with those kinds of telescopes, we will measure mass and distance to about 0.1%. Now, combining this with 100 EHT observations, which by that time is hopefully a very realistic number, we can even improve this limit by another 20%, but that's not the key point here. The key point is that we can produce very tight constraints on this deviation parameter, so plus minus, well, 0.1, a little bit more at 2 sigma. And this is, as I said, all you need is a 30-meter telescope, 100 EHT observations, and we're in the game. So this is very exciting. Okay. So with that, let me summarize. Hopefully, I've convinced you that with the EHT, we are entering an era of high-precision, strong-gravity measurements, starting as soon as next year, when larger arrays will become available. I presented you a new Kerr-like metric, which I can use as a framework to model these kinds of non-GI effects. I showed you two scenarios, showed you array of images and the shape of the photon ring, which we can analyze in the way that I showed you. I showed you current and future constraints on potential deviations from GR, as well as on the mass and distance for the galactic center. And most importantly, the photon ring encodes everything. An asymmetric shape or a disproportionate ring size would be smoking guns for a violation of GR. This is something that is very interesting and that we can go and look for. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Right here in front.
In order to get observations, rings, diameters, photons, and shadow effects, you need to know the inclination angle is somewhat large. What is the status of the measurement of the inclination angle for galactic center black hole?
We do not need the inclination measurement if we look at the photon ring, at the shape of the ring. This is what I was about what you can find in. Let's look at this figure first. I think this makes this very clear. So this is the shape of the photon ring for a Kerr black hole. You can see that this is almost always circular unless you have very high inclinations. And making this more precise, looking at this figure, this is the asymmetry of the ring, and you can see that this is small unless you go to very high spin and high inclinations. So for the photon ring, especially when we're only interested in the diameter, we don't need to know the inclination. We need to know the inclination when we fit an accretion flow model to this. But then this is one of the fit parameters. And I didn't show you the plot, but I can go back to the numbers. If we go back to this simulation, I can extract these angles to very high precision. But even with the existing data, these are the limits that we have at the moment. So this is something that we can do very well given this Ryhoff model.
Andrea?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The nice thing about this is that the effect of this epsilon parameter shows up at the quadrupole order. So what this means is goes hand in hand with the analysis by Cliff Will in 2006, 2008, so that this will introduce the characteristic precessions of the orbital plane in roughly the same order. But what I like about this is, we can compare just mass and distance, and this alpha-1-3 parameter has an impact clearly at the black hole, but not directly far away. It does with these orbital plane precessions, but that is higher order. So this is why I think this is a very nice way of combining the measurements and then making a constraint.
Besides wonderful relation between multiple moments and the rotation parameter in Kerr space-time, there is another nice property, namely complete integrability of the trajectories in Kerr space-time. It's a Carter integral of motion. So if you violate Kerr metric, you lose this property. As a result, I suppose, instead of sharp shadow, you will have diluted boundary of the shadow. And for your epsilon large, effect may be large. Hmm. Did you consider this kind of things?
Yes. And I can argue this with this plot. If you have a metric where geodesic motion is integrable, then you can calculate the shape of the shadow analytically or semi-analytically. So these plots are exact for the Kerr metric, that is the case. For general Kerr-like metrics, this is not the case, and you lose this kind of property. In that case, what you have to do, you simply plug the metric into a full-scale ray tracing algorithm. You still end up with a sharp shadow feature, though. But in this case, you would have to calculate these image shapes numerically. In the, go ahead.
But the motion is chaotic, so you can expand that it will be not exact position. For small deviation, you will have different position of the shadow. So chaoticity is important here.
Well, we don't necessarily limit ourselves to small perturbations. Because if you think about it, if you think about black holes, GR is not a small perturbation away from Newtonian gravity. So there's no a priori argument that you can make why you would expect deviations to be small. And we don't restrict ourselves to that. So what we do is a non-perturbative analysis. And all that we really need is a metric, and we put this into our simulations, our ray tracing algorithms, and that is really all we need.